What led you to make this film?
It all started, I think, closer to 2009, 2008, when I was reading a lot about Pakistan, and I was trying to find some people that I could look up to, or at least look into in the country, like people, leaders, or iconic leaders. And I found a lot of politicians and a lot of people that I wasn't really sure I related to until I found this man named Abdulsattar Eidi, who my mother always spoke about. So I picked up this little autobiography from this Pakistani store, and it was written in this broken English, but I was able to really understand what was going on, and was really moved by his story. And I was going to this gallery showing of Umar Malik, this photographer at the time. I mean, he was doing a lot of photo work for National Geographic and other places. And I was like, look, let's work on this. Let's run and go to Pakistan. So we raised a little bit of money, and 3 or 4 years later, we finally have a film.
What were you hoping to accomplish with the film?
I mean, I don't know how I can necessarily say in one sentence or a couple of sentences on what I'm hoping people will end, like when they leave the film, like what they could get out of it. But as long as they just see that people in different parts of the world are very similar to them, I feel like at least we've started a different conversation on the region.
I mean, I also think that in terms of craft, we've done a few things that we've at least tried to push the craft a little bit. The whole thing was shot largely at a 50mm focal length, which is essentially the focal length of the human eye. And you know, that's something I read about in Stan Brakhage's writings, and I thought, well, okay, that needs to be explored a little further. And it was, a lot of it was shot at shoulder height. We kept the voiceover and interview to a bare minimum, and we could do that because we were shooting on, you know, little DSLR cameras and could shoot endlessly. And then, you know, put the story together through Verite and really push that. So I hope also people respond to the craft of the film, which I think made our filmmaking process about 7 or 8 times longer than it would have been if we'd stuck with a standard format. Is that fair, Vasant?
Yeah. And just piggybacking on that with what we did with the music in the film, one of the questions that we had when we were working on the music to the film, and I think it probably says a lot about how we were approaching it altogether, was we wanted to make sure it didn't sound like a sitar, or it didn't sound like something that could just be associated with that region. Because if we did that, what we do is we then separate. People can then create a bucket in their mind, like, oh, okay, we're in a different part of the world now. But we wanted it to sound something as if it is. It is from here. I mean, or not even from here, but it's hard for people to place.
How long were you there for?
On and off for about 3 to 4 years, right, Omar?
That's three years. Yeah. It's strange to hear it said out loud, but that's the truth, yeah.
Okay, and how much of that time was spent just talking to people and kind of figuring out which characters would figure prominently in the film?
Oh boy, I mean, we found a central character, I think, on the first day that we got to the runaway home, and he was sort of larger than life. And in fact, his friendship with one of the other characters that just loomed over everything. And in fact, the pivotal footage for their relationship, I think we shot on the first, or was it the second day of shooting? I forget, actually.
Okay, so a lot of the characters in the film are children, runaways. Was there ever a point where, I don't know, you felt a little uncomfortable by your status as kind of an observer? I guess the question I'm asking is, I feel sometimes when you embed yourself in the lives of others and you're just filming, sometimes it could feel maybe exploitative. And I think that's just the nature of documentary film and just maybe journalism in general sometimes. But did you ever get that feeling or just that discomfort?
If I can take that, I think a lot of those frustrations and those issues that circle any documentary work had been things that I'd had to press my head against for quite a few years before that. And because this was a passion piece for both Bassam and I, and we weren't actually beholden to anybody, I was particularly proud about how we handled some of those issues. So to be specific, you know, there was a train of thought, at least when I was shooting documentary photography, that, you know, sort of you don't get involved and you stay outside. And I think it is that feigned neutrality that actually leads to a lot of the problems. But I hope that at least in these stories, we were human beings first. And what I mean by that is that, you know, we maintained relationships with these children and even well, the central character and his family. And also, you know, I mean, there were just things that sort of, you know, you would leave having shot, and then, you know, the ambulance, the foundation is trying to get some of these kids home, and we thought, well, God, you know, they've got to get home. You know, what can we do, you know, to help? And I think our presence there actually ended up helping, trying to get these children home. And I think had we not done any of those things, then we would have risked going to bed without a clear conscience about some of this stuff. And I think, I think that certainly actually goes against the grain of the way a lot of documentary stuff is done.
How did your presence help, do you think, as they were, as some of the characters were in the ambulance returning home?
Well, I think that, look, here's the thing is that, you know, it's like you can, you know, I use the word feigned neutrality, you know, that people try for a neutrality, but it doesn't really exist. And I really do believe that. I think that, you know, we could have tried to have been as fly on the wall as we wanted, but, you know, we were there with our cameras we're paying attention by pointing a lens and Bassam with a big boom mic at these kids, and we're from outside. So that invariably means that, well, okay, what are they doing? Well, okay, well, you know, if we were going to get these or try to get these kids back next month, well, you know, these people are paying attention to them. Let's get them back this weekend or 2 weekends from now. So I'm not saying, you know, we didn't meddle or have a hand in it in that sense, but us, you know, us sort of being there, and I think it forced people to consider, well, let's really put our shoulder to the wheel and try and get these kids home. And then, you know, at that point, when their decision has been made on what they're going to do, you know, something that we can't control, then, I mean, you know, we certainly were like, you know, I mean, just grabbed who we could, you know, that we could help them and say, well, okay, well, you know, where do you live? Talk to them, this and that, and we documented as much as we could. So it's a process that's going on regardless, but, you know, we would be naive and I think even dishonest to pretend that our presence being there didn't probably also help accelerate that. And that's not something we shied away from, because I actually don't think it's difficult to talk in hypotheticals and what ifs, but I remember we had tons of conversations about this, but, you know, when we were finishing filming, we actually thought, okay, well, we've got this, you know, this piece of footage, and we put the cameras down and head back. We thought, well, now how do we get the kids back home?
Yeah.
You know? And that's I think you've got to be a human being first, and that's how you avoid these issues of exploitation that certainly some of my peers have felt when they were doing things like conflict photography in very similar regions, if not that region. You know, you've got to be a human being first, and I think that's critical to keeping your own humanity in this profession.